Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The year's hottest IPO gets an institutional shot in the arm. Plus, Chinese warships mobilize in a major, unannounced show of force.
We've not seen anything this large before. Also, it's a sign that China is feeling more confident about doing naval exercises further away from its own coast.
And the EU readies a probe of Beijing's EV subsidies. It's Wednesday, September 13th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The biggest IPO of the year is fast approaching, and investor interest in British chip designer Arm, ahead of its NASDAQ debut tomorrow, appears to be red hot. We'll get more details today when Arm and its underwriters formally price the IPO, but there are already signs the world's leading chip makers and Arm's biggest customers are buying into the sale. Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb is here with the latest. Quinton, we know Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, is among those eyeing a big investment in Arm, reportedly of up to $100 million. SoftBank is only selling 10% of Arm via this sale. It seems like it's not going to be difficult to find buyers here.
Hi there. That's right. So what Arm has done is it has lined up a kind of stellar gallery of industry figures, including Apple, Google, Intel, Nvidia, Samsung, and TSMC, which, as you say, has committed to buy as much as $100 million of the stock on its own. And those cornerstone investors serve an important role here. First, they are a demonstration of the almost unique role that Arm has within the industry, where it's seen as a kind of neutral party that works with many, many counterparties. Second, it's a useful signal to institutional investors that you have all this support for the deal. And of course, it reduces the amount of stock that has to be sold to other investors. So it makes it easier to get the deal over the line or to get the good pricing that SoftBank and Arm would be looking for. I should say as well that this is seen as a very important test of the health of the overall IPO market, which is reopening after a difficult period. If a big bellwether IPO goes well, that is usually seen as a good signal for others to kind of get deals away and for people who are considering whether they should test the waters to push ahead with listing plans.
Quinton, it's almost a unicorn listing, right? A company so involved in one of the big industries of the moment and with this slate of corporate backers, the kind of listing that could inject real confidence into the broader market.
That's right. The big question, of course, is the extent to which investors buy the narrative that Arm is going to be as central to the AI era as it has been to the smartphone era. It's been a very important player in smartphones. The question, of course, is whether it will be as important in artificial intelligence.
That was Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb. Meanwhile, Birkenstock is looking to capitalize on its enduring popularity among fashionistas and tech gurus alike and has filed for an IPO. The German shoemaker plans to trade as Birk on the New York Stock Exchange, with American private equity firm L. Catterton listed as the selling shareholder. In the filing, the company reported fiscal 2022 revenues of about 1.3 billion euros alongside a significant profit. The journal has previously reported that an IPO could fetch as much as $7 billion. The clock is ticking on labor talks between members of the United Auto Workers and manufacturers GM, Ford, and Jeep maker Stellantis. Though the parties have until tomorrow night to agree on new four-year labor agreements, the president of the UAW is said to have rolled out work stoppage plans, including targeted strikes, that could escalate the longer it goes without a new contract. Meanwhile, automakers have built up inventory to provide some cushion in the event of a strike. UAW President Sean Fain is expected to speak in a live stream this afternoon, having repeatedly expressed doubts about reaching a deal with automakers ahead of Thursday's deadline. And it's Inflation Day in the U.S. Consumer price data due out this morning will be closely watched ahead of a Fed policy meeting next week. And Journal Economics reporter Amara Omokwe told us that while they are likely to hold rates steady, today's CPI release could shape debate about whether another hike is needed later in the year.
Economists expect overall inflation in August picked up when compared with July, mainly because of a rise in gas prices last month. But still, economists expect to see that underlying price pressures eased in August because core inflation, which excludes volatile food and energy prices, is estimated to have cooled off over the month. Economists generally view core prices as a better indicator of where inflation is headed than the headline number. And the more inflation cools as the job market and other parts of the economy remain on relatively solid footing, the better the chance the Fed can bring inflation to its 2% target without raising interest rates so much that it causes an economic recession.
Coming up, the European Union is launching an investigation into how China subsidizes its EV makers. We've got that story and much more after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The European Commission is launching an investigation into subsidies given to EV makers in China.
Europe is open to competition, but not for a race to the bottom. We must defend ourselves against unfair practices.
That was European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen making today's unexpected announcement, which marks yet another bump in the road for EU-China relations. And joining me now with more on this is Kim McCrail, our reporter in Brussels. Kim, what exactly is the European Commission looking into here?
We don't have a whole lot of detail about what exactly the Commission will be doing in this investigation. They've announced it through this speech, and they haven't yet provided details on the scope and how much they plan to tackle in this investigation. But we know there are big concerns from the EU about subsidies to Chinese companies, especially in the clean tech realm. So you heard in the speech that President von der Leyen gave, she mentioned the history of Chinese subsidies and their impact on the solar industry and the harm that she says was done to the European solar industry. The EU sees something similar happening when it comes to electric vehicles right now. And so they're looking at doing a probe into whether or not the electric vehicle industry in Europe is being hurt by subsidies that are coming from China.
And Kim, in terms of the economic backdrop to all of this, we've previously reported on the cutthroat EV price war that is sort of going on around the world now. Could that be a driver here?
EVs are kind of emerging as one of the key fronts in the battle that is going on globally for shares of the market in clean technology. It's an industry that's obviously growing very quickly with concerns about climate change and efforts to reduce greenhouse gases. And what we're seeing is countries, jurisdictions globally looking for ways to try to ensure that their markets have a chance to get a piece of the clean tech market.
So there's that component of this. And then the diplomatic one, how does this speak to the relationship between Europe and Beijing? For instance, we do know in late May, the US and Europe agreed to reduce their dependency on China.
So it's a really interesting piece of a larger dialogue and debate that's going on in Europe right now over what kind of relationship the EU should have with China, which a lot of officials see as a strategic rival, a rival that carries a lot of risks for Europe, but also the biggest trade partner for the EU. So the language that you hear from a lot of European officials is there's a desire to take an approach that involves de-risking, dealing with some of the risks. And here I think they would point to subsidies and their impact on European industry as one of those risks without decoupling, without pulling apart from the trade relationship with China entirely. So they're really trying to find, I guess, a bit of a balancing act in how to push back against practices they think are unfair and also not end or damage too deeply, at least, the relationship they have with a major trade partner.
That was our reporter in Brussels, Kim McCrail. Kim, thank you.
Thank you.
Russian President Vladimir Putin met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un this morning at Russia's primary spaceport. The two leaders spoke for 3 hours, with Putin offering assistance in building satellites for North Korea, according to Russian state newswire RIA Novosti. There is still no word, however, on a potential arms deal between the two countries, though delegations are expected to continue discussions today ahead of a state dinner this evening. A Chinese aircraft carrier and around 24 other Chinese warships are gathering in the Western Pacific, according to authorities in Taiwan and Japan. The unusually large group suggests that Beijing may be planning major naval exercises, although China has made no announcements about imminent naval drills. WSJ Asia security correspondent Alistair Gale told us the movement follows a flurry of U.S. military activity in the region.
We've not seen anything this large before. It's a sign that China is feeling more confident about doing naval exercises further away from its own coast. Typically, the Chinese Navy operates fairly close to the mainland there, but they're increasingly doing exercises further out in the Pacific. And also because this is happening to the east of Taiwan, which is an island that, of course, China claims as its own. They're showing that they can effectively surround Taiwan if they wanted to do, if they were to launch some kind of major military operation. And so it's a message, really, that Taiwan is vulnerable on all sides.
Ukrainian missile strikes have hit Russian Navy shipyards in the Crimean port city of Sevastopol overnight, damaging two warships that were undergoing repair, according to Russian authorities. There was no immediate claim of responsibility by Ukraine, but our chief foreign correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov told us that Kyiv has carried out a series of missile and drone strikes on key Russian targets in Crimea in recent months.
It's the most spectacular Ukrainian strike against the Black Sea Fleet since the sinking of the cruiser Moskva, which was the fleet's flagship, in April last year. And once again, it demonstrated Ukraine's ability to strike deep behind the front line at the heart of the Russian military machine.
And CDC advisors have endorsed a new round of COVID-19 booster shots for Americans 6 months and older, targeting this season's variants. But as Journal Health reporter Brianna Abbott told us, COVID shots are no longer free after the end of the U.S. public health emergency in May.
This is the first year that the COVID vaccines are available through the commercial market and not universally free through the government. And the list price that the companies are giving ranges from about $110 to $130 a dose. But the good news is that most people are likely going to be able to access them through little to no cost, either through their health insurance, because both public and private health insurance covers the vaccine without cost sharing most of the time. And the CDC has also set up a bridge access program meant for this year into the end of 2024 that's going to provide free vaccines for those without insurance or who are underinsured to sort of plug the gap a little bit.
And finally, for EV drivers on the move, pulling up to a charging station only to find that it's broken can be the difference between getting where you want to go on time and not. And in the U.S., that can be a frequent issue. According to a government database of public chargers, more than 6,000 of them are reported by their owners as being temporarily unavailable. To tackle the problem, the federal government is launching a $100 million effort to repair and replace thousands of old or out-of-commission chargers. And as energy reporter Jennifer Hiller told us, reliability issues will have to be addressed in order for the EV transition to be a success.
Automakers are putting more EVs on the road, and those drivers have to be able to charge reliably in public. Lots of charging happens at home, but not all charging. And J.D. Power driver studies are continuing to show that U.S. EV drivers are getting more frustrated with public charging, not less. Even Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said that he and his family just encountered a broken charger on a trip to a local park in the last week. The idea of all of this funding is that charging would become as easy as going to the gas station. And when you go to the gas station, you rarely to never wonder if gas is actually going to be dispensed. And they are hoping for the same thing eventually for electricity.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant and Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.